Morning, today's daf in Tumura is Chav Zayin. We are on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. We are starting, we really are starting with the words Abaye, which is about 10 lines down from the top of the Amud. I'm going to start with Amar Rav Ashi in the Gemara inside, but before I do so, let's just take a step backwards. We're going to go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah talked about what are the languages that affect Tumura, what are the languages that are affecting Chilul. Tumur and Chilul are very similar to one another, and so there is a tremendous subtle difference between the two of them, but it's really all the difference in the world. Tumur is an issur in the Torah, Chilul is exactly what you're supposed to do. So the language that you use is going to forecast whether or not you are trying to affect Tumur or you're trying to affect Chilul. Yesterday, I made an attempt of explaining the difference between Tumur and Chilul. I did okay, and so hopefully today I'll also do okay in terms of explaining this real subtle difference, but it's extraordinarily important because it really makes the difference between violating the Torah versus doing exactly what you're supposed to do. If there are two animals and I want to transfer the Kedusha from one animal to another, and I'm doing it directly, that's Tumura, and that's what the Torah prohibits. And on top of that, and this will become so clear the course of today, if the primary animal, the source animal in which you're trying to affect Tumura is a Tumim, so then, for sure, it's Tumura. It can't be anything other than Tumura. Because once you're dealing with an animal that's a Tumim, so you can't be Mechalo, you can't deconsecrate, you can't redeem the Kedusha from that animal, because it's a Tumim. And one of the most basic rules regarding a Karban is a Tumim is non-redeemable. A Tumim Karban is non-redeemable. So the only way that you're going to be now transferring the Kedusha from this animal to another is via Tumura. And so therefore, that's a violation of the Torah, and that's, of course, what the Torah doesn't want. What language would indicate that you're trying to do Tumura? So the Mishnah taught us that there are three languages that speak to Tumura. Hare zu tachat zu, says the Mishnah. Hare zu tachat zu, Tumura zu, Khalifa zu. So either using the words of tachat Tumura or Khalifa is the idea where you're trying to affect Tumura. And so therefore, as we learned from day one of this Masechta, you violated the Torah. The Tumura is in fact effective. And so therefore now the Kedusha has gone from A to B. But of course A also remains Kadosh. That's the Pasuk in the Torah. Vayahu usmurasu yekodesh. On the other hand, there's also Mechulal. Now Mechulal means that I do the following. Now again, I can only do this with a blemished animal. What I do with a blemished animal is that I have a Karban that got a Bamum, that got a blemish. And now what I do is I deconsecrate the animal. I redeem the animal. That's perfectly legitimate. Now what do I deconsecrate it on? On anything of value. I could deconsecrate it onto money, or if I want to, I could deconsecrate it onto another animal. That's also fine. As long as I'm doing it through the process of chilul, of deconsecration, so then what you're doing is not only acceptable, it's exactly what you're supposed to do. With a carbon that becomes a balmum, you're supposed to do chilul. What language is affecting chilul? So zu mechulelas al zu. So if I say that this one is going to be mechulah on the other, so ein ze tumura. So that's not going to be a case of Tumura, but rather that's Chilul. Now, if you think about it, it's very similar to one another. Tumura is where I'm transferring the Kedusha from A to B. Chilul, I'm deconsecrating, I'm removing the Kedusha from A, and then I'm taking that now value of Kedusha, and I'm moving it into another animal, right? It sounds awfully similar to one another. But again, the difference being is that by Tumura, what I'm trying to do is just simply move the Kedusha. I'm trying to take it off the A and move it to B. Mashenkin by Chilul, my primary objective is to be mechalal, is to deconsecrate. What I do with it then subsequently is basically I move it on to another item of value. And that other item of value could be an animal as well. Okay, so that is Tumur versus Chilul in the languages of the Mishnah. As we learned in yesterday's Gemara, the word tachas has an ambiguity. Tachas can sometimes mean to exchange, like our Mishnah described. But tachas could also mean that what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to remove and move it over to something else, but not transfer and exchange, not the lashon of atfuse. And the Gemara quoted psukim in Chumash, one pasuk from Vayikra, another pasuk from Yeshayahu, where there are multiple definitions of the word tachas. And what did we learn yesterday's daf? Well, it really depends on the context of the scenario. The Gemara illustrated two different types of contexts where the word tachas is going to mean tumura, an exchange, or it's going to mean chilul and deconsecration. So one difference we learned yesterday is Rava. Rava taught us yesterday, I'll just start here in the Gemara, because it's a good place to pick it up, right from where I just finished describing. I'm a Rava. Afilu b'kodshe mizbeach. I'm sorry, let me back up one line. Gabi kachi bedeka baisa lo avdin tamura lishna da achulehu. I'll even go back up one line above that. Vehilkach. Gabi kachi mizbech da avdin tamura lishna da tfusehu. Gabi kachi bedeka baisa lo avdin tamura lishna da achulehu. So the Gemara starts off by making one very good distinction in terms of when I use the word tachas, did I mean it? Did I go with definition number one of tamura, or did I go with definition number two of chulin? So it's very simple. If I'm dealing with something which is a karban, so then I use the word tachas, I'm trying to invoke tamura. If I'm using bedek habayis, which is not subject to tamura, so then what I'm using is tachas as a form of chulin. That is one approach of the Gemara. Gemara gives a second approach. Amar Rava, we did this yesterday. Amar Rava, afil bekachem izbech mishkachal alishna da'achulehu kigon shayakdish ba'mom. Rava says, I'll give you another example, another basic contextual distinction of whether the word tachas is meant as tamura or tachas is meant as chilo. If I'm using it regarding a carbon that's a tamim, and I use the word tachas to try to transfer the kedusha from A to B, that is via tamura because there's no other way to see it. A animal which is a tamim can only be transferred via tamura. Masha'in kein, if the carbon is now a ba'mum, and so now there is a possibility to be mechalo, and I use the word tachas, so the word tachas over there means chilo. It means deconsecration. That's another contextual distinction. And the Gemara gives us a third contextual distinction. That's Ravashi. Am Ravashi afilu babali mom nami mishkach lalishan da chulin mishkach lalishan da tfuse. Ravashi says that even if my carbon is a bamom, I could still make a contextual distinction where it is serving as, the word tachas is serving as either tamura or it's serving as chulin. And what does it depend on? It depends on which of the two animals right now I'm focusing. Because consider now, I'm taking the kedusha off of the first animal and I'm moving it to the second animal. Well, how do I know that I'm trying to take the kedusha off and then move it? Or if I'm trying to do a direct transfer, that's called tamura. So the Gemara says it's very simple. Yado akodesh cholhave. When I am trying to affect this quote-unquote exchange, but my hand is on the animal with kedusha, so what I'm trying to do is deconsecration. And I use the word tachas, so that's deconsecration, that would be totally fine. Yado achol, but if my hand is rather going on the other animal, on the receiving animal, so then kadoshu. And I'm using the word tachas, so there, that is a direct transfer of the kedusha from the source animal, the baal mum karban, and our secondary animal. And that obviously then is an effect to mura. And all this is using the word tachas, and that is in effect a tamura, and then I'm violating the iser. So here we have three basic contextual distinctions of the Gemara, where it's the word tachas can either be understood as tamura, which is an iser in the Torah, or tachas is understood as chilo, which is perfectly legitimate, perfectly fine. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end. That's where we got to yesterday. Let's pick it up right where we left off yesterday. And the Gemara starts off now with a series of questions. Okay, so, again, before we start with the series of questions, which is going to take us through the majority of the Amud Aleph of today, so, let us set it up nice and good, nice and clear. When I'm using the word tachas to try to transfer the kedusha from the primary carbon to the secondary carbon, so tachas has an ambiguity to it, it could be understood as tamura, it could be understood as just simply to be mechalal. If I meant tamura, so then it's a violation of the Torah. And vayahu usmarsu yakodesh. The primary animal and the secondary animal are going to have kedusha. If I'm trying to do it through chilo, my tachas is meant as chilo, so then the primary animal is now going to be deconsecrated because I did exactly what I was supposed to do, and the secondary animal is going to take up that kedusha. Good. Now, what we also learned just now, at the beginning of Shir today, is that there are contextual clues that indicate whether or not you meant tachas as tamura, or you meant tachas as tchilo. The Gemara now, with all this in mind, asks a series of questions. Now, we're going to assume from this point going forward that we're working with Rav Ashi's contextual clue. What was Rav Ashi's contextual clue? Where's my hand? Is my hand on the primary animal? So then I meant tamura. If my hand was on the secondary animal? No, I take it back. Okay, right, I'm listening to myself also. Okay, if I put my hand on the primary animal, I want to be mechalo. And I use the word tachas. So I want to be mechalo. And I'm deconsecrating. If I put my hand on the secondary animal, on the receiving animal, so then I'm in tamura. Okay. We're going to assume like Rav Ashi right now. And in these series of questions, as Rashi points out in the beginning of all these questions, we are going to assume that right now his hand is on neither animal. So we are missing our contextual clue in terms of whether he meant it to be tachas with definition of tamura or tachas with definition of chilum. Abaye. So here comes question number one. I have two animals in front of me. They are a karban, and both of them are blemished animals. And I have two non-consecrated animals, and they are both non-blemished. And I say that this one is tachas elu. So I'm using now the ambiguous word of tachas, as I am now either, remember there are two possibilities right now, I'm either deconsecrating the Kedusha from the original two primary karbanos, which I can, because they're both balas mum, and then afterwards I'm then moving that Kedusha over to the second animal. That would be tachas with the understanding of chilo, and that's perfectly legitimate. Or maybe what I meant was, no, I wanted to do tamura, because tachas could also mean tamura, and I wanted to directly transfer the Kedusha from the primary animals to the secondary animals. Now Rashi points out over here, in terms of this question, we really didn't need two animals. In other words, this question could have just as well worked with moving the Kedusha from one Baal Mum animal to one Tumim animal. We could have done that. But as we're going to see, the upcoming questions all deal with multiple animals. So to keep a certain symmetry and parallel within the Gemara, therefore the Gemara asks with two, starts off the question with two animals. So Mahu. So the Gemara says, what are our two possibilities? One possibility is that he affected Tamura. The Tachas was meant as a form of Tamura. The other possibility is, well, look, Tachas is ambiguous. And in my ambiguity, my two choices are either he was affecting Tamura or he was doing Chilo. Now, if he's affecting Tamura, he's violating a Nisr. Now, if we have an opportunity to understand his statement not as something that which is prohibited, but rather something which is permitted, don't you think a person, when given equal opportunity to either violate Nisr in the Torah or to do the right thing, don't you think he's going to do the right thing? This is the expression of the Gemara, lo shavik inishetera, a person will not leave a permissible act, va'avidisura, and do something which is prohibited. So it's much easier to entertain that when he said tachas, and he, of course tachas has the ambiguity, but what he meant is something which is permitted to do, which is chilo. Fine. V'imtim, salamar kol hecha di'ikadhetera, lo shavik inishetera. So the Gemara says, and you know what? It's such a good thought. Let's think like that. Let's think that the person will not do an isser when he has an opportunity, an equal opportunity to do a heter. And so therefore, in our first case where it's from two balas mum to two tamimim, and he said the word tachas, he meant chilo, because that's the manner of heter, and let's assume that's exactly what he did. So the Gemara says, okay, so let me ask you now a second question. There are going to be a total of four questions coming up, and you'll see each one now builds on the previous question. So let's ask question number two. Ha'ilof anashtei behem b'shol kodesh v'achas mehem balas mum. So now in our second question, it starts off very similar. Our original two karbanos are a shel kodesh, that's a redundancy. Our two original karbanos, one was a balas mum, and shtei behem shel kodesh v'achas mehen balas mum. One of them was a balas mum, and the other one was a tamen. Okay? And now, v'shtei behem shel chulin v'achas mehen balas mum, v'achas mehen balas mum. And on the receiving end now, I also have two chulin animals. One is a tamim, and the other is a balmum. Va'amar hare elu tachas elu. And again, the statement, I want these tachas these. So here now, it becomes interesting. Mahu. Now, the Gemara over here is a little bit complicated. There's a discussion of what is the correct girsa. I'm going to present the girsa that we have in our Gemara. That is Rashi's girsa that he worked with. If you want to see and learn an alternative girsa, so take a look at the Vilna Gaon over here, who has an alternative girsa. But I'm going to work with Rashi. Mi amar tamima tachas tamima latfuse. So now, here's one possibility. What he meant was the following. That what he wanted to match was the tamim karban to the tamim chulin. And remember, by the tamim karban, there's no other way to do it. The only way to transfer the Kedusha is via tamura. And so therefore, if he went from tamim to tamim, so that means that for the first exchange, he wanted tamura. And now, balas mum tachas balas mum la'achule. And then the second exchange was to go from the blemished animal, the blemished karban, to the blemished chulin. Now that, you don't have to do tamura. For that, you could do chilo, because the bal mum karban is eligible for pidyon. And so therefore, one possibility is that in this dual exchange, So on the first exchange from Tamim to Tamim, that would be a violation of Tamura. Or maybe, and I'm sorry, not or. And the second exchange is from Balmum to Balmum, and that was done via Chulin. So in other words, how many Isurim did he violate? Only one Isur. Udilma Tamima de Chulin Tachas Baal's Mum de Hektesh, and Baal's Mum de Chulin Tachas Tamima de Hektesh, Vitar Vayalaki. Or maybe no. Or maybe this person was thinking to himself that, you know what, here's my exchanges. I want to go from the Tamim, from the Baal Mum Hektesh to the Tamim Chulin, and that would be Tamura. And from the Baal Mum Chulin, and from the Tamim Hektesh to the Baal Mum Chulin, and that of course would also be also Tamura, and therefore he'd be violating two Isurim. Now a couple points to point out over here in this Gemara's question. So again, the question of the Gemara basically is, there is for sure going to be at least one Tamura exchange over here, because remember, of the primary animals, one of them is a Tamim. So the only way to exchange the Kedusha over there is via Tamura, not via Chilo. So there for sure is going to be one Isser of Tamura. The question on the table is, can we assume that he for the one that he doesn't have to do Tamura, he did it with Chulin, with Mechulal, or do we say no? Do we say that he violated one Isser of Tamura, maybe also violated two Isserim of Tamura? A couple of things to point out over here before we go on in the Gemara. One, the Gemara is assuming that when going from a Baal Mum to Baal Mum, Baal Mum Karban to Baal Mum Chulin, that can't be Tamura. The Gemara assumes it can't be Tamura. Now, why can't it be Tamura? So it's really interesting. Rashi here writes, now this is Chavzayin Amud Aleph. This is now almost at the end of the Masechta. But it's such an interesting issue, and it's hard to imagine that this has not come up earlier. Although, to be fair, it has really come up earlier. Tosfos makes that point. But but here we go. We know that Tamura, you can go from a Tamim Karban to a Tamim Chulin. We also know that by Tamura, you can go from a Tamim Karban to a Baal Mum Chulin. We also know that by Tamura, you can go from a Baal Mum Karban to a Tamim Chulin. How do I know that? Because there's Pesukim in the Torah. The Torah says, Bein Tov L'Ra, Bein Ra L'Tov. Whether you're going from good to bad or bad to good. Meaning, in either one of those scenarios, one will violate the Isur of Tamura. Oh, but let me ask you a simple question. What if the Tamura is being exchanged from Ra to Ra? From the animal being a Baal Mum, from the carbon being a Baal Mum, to a Chulin animal which is also Baal Mum. Is that a violation of Tamura? And Rashi says, no, it's not. Why not? Because it's not in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Mein Tov L'Ra, Mein Ra L'Tov. And so from the Pasuk, you do not get a sense that there is an Isur of Tamura to go from Ra to Ra. That's Rashi. Rashi writes that over here. Tosfos, the second Tosfos on the Amud, takes great exception to that point of Rashi, but that is Rashi's position over here. That's why in the first consideration of the Gemara, when the Gemara was going from Tamim to Tamim and from Baal Mum to Baal Mum, it's not a violation of Tamura. And the reason why is because there is no violation of Tamura when you're going from Ra to Ra. That's the that's a really interesting Rashi that's right over here. If you want to see the Rashi inside, it's Dibra Maskel Balas Mum, Tachas Balas Mum, Lachule.
Now, what can't we say? It can't be brought up as a carbon. Of course it can affect Tamura.
Okay, but in other words, but it's also true, you consider what you're saying. It's also true if I'm going from Tamim to Baal Mum, and meanwhile that's a violation of Tamura. Even though on the secondary animal, on the receiving animal, you can't offer it as a carbon.
Right.
Okay. And yet it's a violation of Tamura.
No, I understand, but the primary animal already you can't offer it as a carbon.
Okay, but all right. Anyway. That's Rashi. Point number two. What's the question over here? One Isser versus two Isserim. How is this any better than the first question? And the answer is, the Gemara basically spells it out. I'm just spelling it out right now. And that is that, look, this person clearly is violating one Isser. Once we see that the person's violating one Isser, do we basically throw in the towel? Well, he violated one Isser. You know what? He clearly has no regard. He violated two Isserim. Or maybe no. Maybe it's true he, by definition, has to violate one Isser, but we could still minimize, and we could still say that, look, even though he violated an Isser, if there is a way to explain his behavior and his actions so that he's only violating one Isser and not two Isserim, so maybe we would argue that. And the imtim salam kalaychadika hetera lo avid Isser v'lachulahu v'lo laki. And so the Gemara now says, you know what, let's assume that secondary way to look at it. That even though by definition there's one Isser of Tamura being violated, from the tamim to the balmum. But for that second tachas, not necessarily. Maybe that second tachas, he did not mean to violate nisr, since there is a possibility of doing it through chulin, through to be mechalal. So that's what we're going to assume, that he did it through chulin. So here we get up to question number three. So, in question number three, here's the scenario. There are three animals of carbon. Two of them are tamim, one of them is a balmum. There are three receiving animals receiving that kedusha. All three of them are tamim. Now, of the three exchanges, two of them by definition have to be tamura. Because of the primary animals, so two of them are tamim. There is, if he's trying to exchange that kedusha, the only way the kedusha can be exchanged is via tamura. Fine. So of the three exchanges, two of them for sure are going to be tamura. And so now, what's the argument of the Gemara? It's an advanced argument. Well, look, over here, previously we were talking about one out of two exchanges being an isser. Maybe the second one's an isser. And the Gemara says, well, no, let's not say that. But over here, it's a little bit more advanced because of the three exchanges, two of them now are violating an isser. And we have a general principle in throughout Shas called rov. Rov tells us, well, if the majority goes one way, so then the minority generally follows suit. If two of these three exchanges are done via isser, and that third exchange, and again, it's done with the word tachas, which means it's an ambiguity, and we're not sure. And it could be an isser or it could be heter. But if two of the exchanges already is an isser, can we argue that the third exchange is also going to be an isser? So mi amrina mi de tamimos tachas tamimos la tfuse tamimos nami tachas balas mum la tfuse. O de mahachana mi kol hechadika he tera lo avri survi ve'ahi basraisa lachule have. And the Gemara says also we could argue over here as well that of the three exchanges, two of them, even though two of them by definition have to be the isser of tamura, but the third one, at least we can argue that it was done beheter, and so therefore we're going to assume that the third exchange is beheter. The imtim salomar hakanami kevin daakati gavra lo ischazik bisura lo shavaketer vavid isura by Ravashi. So the Gemara says now we're going to make a fourth question, and now we're going to advance the argument just one more step, and that's as follows. Hayulafan of arba behemu shokurs vachas mehem balas mum vaarba behemu shokulin vaamar hare elu tachas elu mahu. So in our fourth question, we're going to start off with four animals. Of the four animals, three of them are tamim, and one of them is a balmum. Now, obviously, with all the primary animals, they're all karbanos. And then we're going to be having the receiving animals. All four of the receiving animals are going to be a tamim. Now, here, of the four, so he's doing four exchanges, and he's doing it all with the word tachas. Mm-hmm. Now, of the three that are going from tamim to tamim, that is tamura, and there's no other way to look at it. So how many times now has he violated the Isser of Tamura?
Three
times over. Three times over, so in Halacha we refer to that as a Chazaka. So now that it is a Chazaka, this person is Muchzak Avaryan. Now, to be fair over here, it's a little bit complicated.
What do you say?
Because, in other words, generally speaking, when we talk about Chazaka, we're talking about pattern of behavior. I violate an Isser, I then violate the Isser, I then violate the Isser. Over here, it's all done in one exchange. So the word chazak over here is not as it is normally presented throughout Shas. But nevertheless, it is a chazak. It is three times over. So va'amare elu tachas elamal ha'chavad akim dischazek avre bi'isure laki be'arba malkios. So on one hand, since of the four exchanges, three for sure is tamura or are tamura. And so therefore now he's considered a muchzak. So the fourth one, even though the fourth one does not have to be an isser. The fourth one could be a heter, because again, he said the word tachas, which has the ambiguity. And it could be understood either as tamura or as chilo. But since three times over now he did tamura, the fourth time he did tamura, and so therefore he's going to get malchus. Odilma afagav dischazik b'yisurei, lo shavik in yishayter, v'avid yisurei, v'ave basrei, salo chulei, ave, teku. Or on the other hand, the counter argument would be, no. The counter argument would be no, it's not going to be a case of tamura in that last one, as long as there is a possibility to interpret his expression of that of chilo as opposed to tamura. So therefore, even though it is now considered a muchzak b'isser, but over here in this fourth one, it would be just an exchange of chilo, not of tamura. Yes.
If the fourth animal is a balmum, right?
Yes.
How could be any question about his intention? He has to replace it because he cannot offer it.
That's true, but he still could do it via Tamura. The Torah says, Bein Tov L'ra, Bein Ra L'Tov.
We learned yesterday, Rabbi said that if you had an option, if there's a Balmum, if it's a Balmum and the guy is like obligated to replace it, then you go with the replacement. Because
The word Tachas has ambiguity, right? I said this in the beginning of Shir today. The word Tachas has ambiguity. It can mean either Tamura or it can mean Chilo. It can go either way. There are contextual clues. In all these cases that are presented, you don't have the contextual clues. But that's the way Rashi sets it up in the beginning.
If the animal is a balm, that's not a context?
From Ravashi's standpoint, that's not enough. Ravashi says you need more. You need more contextual clues. That's Ravashi in the beginning of the entire sugya. Okay.
What is the point of 3 and 4, 3 and 2? In like a,
well, it's a way because 2 out of 3 is Rof. And 3 out of 4 is Chot. Okay, so
why 3 and 4?
No, because the Gemara by Rov, the Gemara says that we're not going to assume that the miyut is an Isser. So over here now, not only is it Rov, it's also Chazaka.
Okay. Because of 3.
Right, exactly. Im haisa hektish ba'mom yatza lechulin. If the hektish is a ba'mom, so it is yotze lechulin, and then the end of the Mishnah, right? Take a look back at the Mishnah on the previous Amud. Yatza lechulin, v'tzarech la'asos damim. You have to make sure that when you're mechalel, when you are deconsecrating, the item that you deconsecrate on has to have equivalent value. And so what we get to discuss now, from this point till the end of the perek, is the idea of equivalent value. Now, obviously, in other words, when you're deconsecrating, that means that you're taking the kedusha off of this item and moving it onto another item. Now, you would assume that we're going to talk about deraisa versus derabanan. We're going to talk about ona'ah. There's going to be a lot of nuanced discussion. But before we get to the nuanced discussion, one can easily imagine that, look, what's fair? What's fair is that this animal had a kedusha. I'm now going to be deconsecrating the animal and moving the kedusha over to something else. So therefore, you want of equal value. Anything less than that is going to be shortchanging the Beis HaMikdash, or in this case, a carbon.
In the blemished state. The value in the blemished state, not in value in the Tamim state.
I assume so. I'm not sure, but I assume so. So Amar Rav Yochanan yatzal lechulin dvar Torah, v'tzarech lasos damim midivrehem. So Rav Yochanan starts off the discussion like this. You know, deconsecration works under any circumstance. Even if that which I'm deconsecrating on has less value, still it works. But the idea that of equivalent value, that's a din derabbanan. It's the chachamim there safeguarding and protecting the value of the Beis HaMikdash, the value of the karban. And so therefore, this requirement of equivalent value is a din derabbanan. Reish Lakish amar, v'tzarech lasos damim dvar Torah. Now Reish Lakish says, I disagree. I feel that when you deconsecrate and move the kedusha over to another item, and it has to be of equivalent value, that's a din d'araisa, not a din derabbanan. V'mayiskinan. So the Gemara says, now, we are talking about where you are off from the equivalent value. How much are you off from? And so let us, before we go on in the Gemara, give ourselves a reintroduction to the topic of ona. Whenever making an exchange with somebody, so I got to be charging fair market value. In other words, profits are totally allowed, and not only allowed, that's how people make a living, by charging profit. But in other words, but when you are charging for something, it has to be a fair market value. If I charge over market value or under market value, so this is fraud, and the Torah's word for it is ona'ah. And as a result of that, so you're violating the isser of ona'ah. Now, what's the rate of ona'ah, or I should say better, what's the percentage of ona'ah, and what are the halachas? So the halacha goes like this. If I charge anything under a sixth of what its fair market value is, so that we say is mechila gemura. So if the item was worth, I'm going to use the $5 because, as you'll see, it's really easy to talk about ona'ah when our base price is $5. So if I'm charged, I'm sorry, $6, let's say. So if an item is worth $6 and I charge now anything under a six greater than its value, well, $6 is $1. So if I charge $5.50, so good. So it's a little bit more than its fair market value, but mechila, right? 50 cents, right? And again, by the way, I say 50 cents relative to $5, but still, mechila. If, however, I charge 1/6, exactly 1/6 above its market value, so under those circumstances now, that is an isser of ona. Now, under those circumstances, what do we say? We say that the sale is still valid, but the actual ona, the extra that was charged, has to be returned back to the buyer. So for a $6 item, if I charge $7, so now the sale is still valid, but the $1 has to be returned. And what about above Ona'a? So above Ona'a, we say Mekachtos. The sale is totally voided because of such an extreme version of fraud. Now, the Gemara over here says that when I'm deconsecrating an animal, moving its Kedusha onto another animal, so we're saying that it has to be of equivalent value. And we have now a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether this is a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan, and the Gemara now wants to know, how much above or below equivalent value are we talking about? Inema a'ona'a. So we're talking about where the amount is ona'a. So meaning a shesus, 1/6. So v'hanem Reish Lakish avtzarech lasos dam in dvar Torah. So the Gemara says, according to Reish Lakish, do we really mean that you're violating, this is a din d'oraisa? The Gemara is going to reintroduce us to the Mishnah in Bava Metzia. The Mishnah in Bava Metzia says, Eilu Dvarim Shein Lahem Onah. There are things that are not subject to Onah, and that are Avadim, Shtaros, Karkaos, Vehekdeshos, slaves, contracts, lands, and Hekdesh. Hekdesh is not subject to Onah. So that means that if I charge a 6 over, and I say a 6, I mean exactly. If I charge a 6 over its price, it is not subject to Onah. So that means to say now that Reish Lakish can't possibly maintain that if the amount that was, in this case, undercharged, remember, we're deconsecrating, if it is going to be exactly a 6 under its value, so then can't be that Reish Lakish says that you violated the Torah. Because the Mishnah Bava Metzia says that if the amount is exactly Onah, 1/6, so that is not subject to Onah. Oh, so we're not talking about a 6. So if we're not talking about a 6, we're talking about something greater than a 6. Ela abito mekach. So we're talking about bito mekach. Now again, the words bito mekach in our context means it's above a 6. If you want to talk in fractions, by the way, so ona is 18.6, right?
A 6 or
16%. Huh? Huh? 16%. So in other words, so now the amount that went over was above 16%. So this is what's called now in halacha bito mekach. So, b'hanemer of Yochanan tzarech lasos damim medivrehem, bito mekach. So bito mekach, there you tripped every wire. In other words, that is fraud to the extreme. And now the Gemara is saying, I can't imagine that there's any other way to look at it other than that's an issur d'oraisa. You deconsecrate an animal and you went above 16%, or in this case, meaning above 60% in terms of the amount that you was discounted from the deconsecrated value. So there, you want to tell me that Rabbi Yochanan is going to tell you that you didn't violate the Torah? The Hamar of Yirmiyah. Now the Gemara says, now consider the following. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, now this is going back on the Mishnah. Akarkos dechulin. Rabbi Yona Amar ha-hekdeshos. Now there is a machlokus between the Amorim, between Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Yona. Rav Yirmiyah is of the opinion that this is specific to Karka, and Rav Yona says that's specific to Hekdesh. What is specific to Karka? What is specific to Hekdesh? Tarvai Mishmeda Rav Yochanan, they both say in the name of Rav Yochanan, Arme Ona Ein Lahem, Bito Mekach Esh Lahem. Look, there's no Ona. If I charge exactly 16% above or below its fair market value, so then you're right. So then Hekdesh, according to Rabbi Yona, or Karka, according to Rav Yirmiyah, is not in the parsha of Ona, meaning exactly 16%. But once I go above 16%, now we're in the parsha Bito Mekach, so then it's going to affect either Karka or Hekdesh. Karka according to Rav Yirmiyah, or according to Rav Yona, it's going to apply to Hekdesh. Meaning, I'll try to say it easier and more succinctly. According to Rav Yona, according to Rav Yochanan, once you're charging anything above, once you're going anything above 16%, you've tripped off the wire for Hekdesh. And that means that you violated the Torah. And so if this is correct, so then the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish that we were first presented with doesn't make any sense. Rav Yochanan says that the tzarech lasos damim is only derabbanan. What do you mean? If we're talking about above 16%, that's not a din derabbanan, that's an iser d'oraisa. So the Gemara says, La'olam abito mekach. So the Gemara says that we are talking about we're in the range of bito mekach, meaning we're above 16%. Ve'epuch. And what we're going to do now is we're going to flip around Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, so that everything now fits in well. Rav Yochanan says that you're violating the Torah if I'm going above 16%. And Reish Lakish says, no, you're not. So the Gemara says, So if I learned that the limitation was on hekdesh, and for sure it's going on karka, so that's very good. But remember, within Rav Yochanan, there were two viewpoints. One was of Rav Yonah. The other one was of Rav Yirmiyah. If I went with the Rav Yirmiyah version of Rav Yochanan, the exclusion from Ona'a is only going on Karka and not going on Hekdesh. So that means to say then that this switching around the sheet of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish works well with Rav Yonah. It does not work well with Rav Yirmiyah. So Rav Yirmiyah will say, look, Rav Yonah had an issue because according to Rav Yonah, Karka and Hekdesh are both going to be tripping the wire, are both going to be, the alarms are going to go off once you're above 16%, once you're in the world of Bitul Mekach. And so therefore, in order to make Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish's Shitas work, so Rav Yonah says, I'll flip around the Shitas. But Rav Yirmiyah will tell you, no, I don't think that Hekdesh is tripping off the wire, tripping the alarm. The only thing that trips off the alarm is only Karka. So that means to say that by Hekdesh, you're not min haTorah. You're not going to be violating the Torah even if you're above 16%. And so therefore, I don't feel like you need to switch around Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. It does say Hekdesh directly, but the only thing it says regarding Hekdesh is it's not subject to Ona'ah. And we can give a really limited interpretation of that Mishnah, meaning it's not subject to Ona'ah at 16%. But above 16%, it is going to be subject to Ona. Right, correct. Lema b'dishmol kamifli, the Gemara now suggests that it's subject to a machlokus between Shmuel. Who's subject to a machlokus between Shmuel? So the way Rashi understands it, this is going back on Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and not on Rabbi Yonah and Rav Yirmiyah. And that's going to be a little bit difficult because the girsa that we have in our Gemara coming up is not going to say that. The girsa coming up in the Gemara is it's going on Rav Yirmiyah and Rav Yonah. So that's why you're going to see a number of times you'll see the Gra flagging the girsa of our Gemara, removing the words Rav Yonah and Rav Yirmiyah, because according to Rashi, it's going back on Reish Lakish and on Rav Yochanan. Lema b'dishmol kamifli, they're arguing within the sheet of Shmuel. Because the Amr Shmuel Hekdesh Shave Mana Shechila Al Shave Pruta. Let's say I have Hekdesh. It was valued at one mana. I deconsecrated onto a Pruta. Now this is Ona to the extreme. Ona'a to the extreme. Something valued at 100 mana, and I deconsecrated onto just a fraction of its value. And meanwhile, Michulal, the Chilo works. So now what we're going to do is we're going to skip the next line and a half of Gemara, and we're going to pick it up right with the words Bein Damar. Bein Damar, Bein Damar, Isle de Shmuel. So the Gemara says no. Everyone agrees to Shmuel. Both Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish agree to Shmuel. And again, we're going to take out the words Rav Yonah and Rav Yirmiyah over here. Because again, Rashi understands this is going back on Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. The Reish Lakish Shavar, Ki Amar Shmuel, the Eved Aval Chatchila Lo. Amar and Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan Savar Afilu Chatchila, and the only question within Shmuel is as follows: everyone's in perfect agreement that, in terms of deconsecration, if I don't go with equivalent value and forget equivalent value, meaning we're just talking about a fraction of its value, so b'di'evit it works according to everybody. The discussion or the debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish is lichatchila, meaning knowing full well that I am not deconsecrating onto equivalent value. And not having any misconception whatsoever about the values, lichatchila, can we go forward? And Rav Yochanan's response to that would be min haTorah, yes. And Reish Lakish would say that min haTorah, no. But in terms of b'di'evin, everyone agrees to Shmuel. So the Gemara says, or we could say like this. Let's not flip around Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. Udikakashlach masnisan ildvarim hegdeshos. Now, as far as the Mishnah is concerned about Metzia, we can give a radically different pshat in the Mishnah in Bav Metzia. And Danny, I thought you were alluding to this earlier. The Gemara now is going to give a really interesting pshat. Now, again, the Mishnah in Bav Metzia tells us that there are things that are not subject to Ona'ah, right? And it gave us a list of four items. The fourth item is Hekdesh. Now, the way we understood it is that by Hekdesh, so if I'm charging 16% above or 16% below, so it's okay. Meaning, I didn't violate the Isser of Ona'ah. Once I charge more than that, Bitul Mekach, so then a debate whether or not you've violated the Torah or you have not violated the Torah. But
Hekdesh loses the upper hand if you do that.
So now Rav Chisda is going to be giving a radically different pshat altogether in the Mishnah in Bar Mitzvah. Kidrav Chista Dam Rav Chista Ein Lamona Einan Betaras Ona'a. Da'afil Pachus Mechtei Ona'a Chozer. Rav Chista gives a really novel interpretation. He says that the Mishnah in Bar Mitzvah means the following. When the Mishnah says that Hektesh is not in the category of Ona'a, that means that for all other transactions, if we went 5%, 10%, 15% above fair market value, mechila, forgiveness. And that's true regarding any exchange of a regular commodity. But when dealing with something belonging to Hektesh, anytime you are deviating an iota above or below its market value, so then, the exchange has not gone through. Now it's interesting, this pshat of Rav Chista, because the Mishnah Bava Metzia is on one hand beautiful, on the other hand really choppy, because in the Mishnah these are the things that are not subject to Onah: avadim, shtaros, karkos, and ekdeshos. Now by avadim, shtaros, and karkos, what the Mishnah clearly means is that there is no Onah, meaning 16% is fine. And then when it comes to Hekdesh, not only is there no Ona'ah, but we're going to go in the total opposite direction, meaning even less than 16% is not okay. So the Mishnah becomes extraordinarily choppy as it's read according to Rav Chista, but still, that's the way Rav Chista understands the Mishnah, and the way now Rav Chista understands the Mishnah, so now, no problem whatsoever. Meaning, now it comes out, according to Rav Chista's reading of the Mishnah, that any time I am charging, I'm deviating any bit from its fair market value, so I violated the Isser of Ona'a. And it's more than that. It's more than violating the Isser of Ona'a. Bitul Mekach, meaning the transaction does not go through. And that would clearly side with the position of Reish Lakish. Right? Reish Lakish says that Av Tzarech Lasos Damim Dvar Torah, it has to be equivalent value min HaTorah. So Reish Lakish clearly can read the Mishnah like Rav Chista. And then we would be good. The Gemara. Let's finish up to the end of the parak. Amar Ula, lo amru ela b'shimui betray. Now, when we're talking over here about deviating from market value, so the question always becomes: what is market value? Who determines market value? So nothing's changed in the last couple thousand years. You get appraisers. Appraisers will come, and appraisers will establish what the market value is. And the Gemara now is going to get into a very technical discussion about the appraisers. So the Gemara says, "Lo amr ela b'shimui betray." So let's say the first series of appraisers were just two people, and then we had a second group of appraisers come, and they came at a different price. Oh, okay, that means that we veered off from market value. Ava b'shimui betlasa ve'afagav da'asi b'me'ah lo hadar. However, if the first set of appraisers were three people, and then the second group of appraisers were made up of 100 people, so even though the second group of 100 came up with a different price than the first group of three, so we'll say that the first group of three gave a fair market value of the item, and so therefore, if the exchange was done based on the three, we're good. I, the 100, disagree. Okay, good. I'm glad the 100 disagree. But the three have established what the fair market value is. Eni, the Gemara says, are you right about that? V'hamar Rav Safra, hecha amar mea ketrei v'trei kemea. So the Gemara says, maybe you're confusing halachas. Because we do have in halacha this concept of a group is a group regardless of numbers. But that's by witnesses and testimony. Two witnesses come and testify. A second group of witnesses made up of 100 testify in another direction. So that's a kat, and that's a kat. That's one group, and that's another group. And as far as halacha is concerned, they're viewed as equivalent. And even though it's 2 versus 100, but again, apishnaim adim yakum davar. Okay. So there, we view them as equivalent groups regarding testimony. However, we're not talking about testimony over here. That's linyan edus. So, but when it comes to appraisal, so appraisal and fair market value is really going to be determined by the number of opinions we have on the matter. If I'm looking at fair market value and two people, or let's say even three people say one thing, and 100 people say something else, right? We all see this intuitively. Don't we all see intuitively that the real value of the item is what the 100 say and not what the 3 say? That's question number 1 of the Gemara. Visu. Talasa v'talasa lozim basar basra diad hektesh al yona. And now we get to a point that Ben mentioned earlier, which is that even if it's 3 against 3, the first 3 said this is what fair market value is. Another group of three come in and say, now we think it's a little bit higher. Now, the first three, didn't they establish market value? Sure they did. But the second three, however, we can't disregard them. And on top of that, who is going to be the beneficiary of the appraisal of the second group? Hektesh. And we have a rule throughout Shas, Yad Hektesh Al Halyona. And so therefore, the next three that gave our secondary appraisal, so we can't ignore them. So, Kasavar Ula Tzarech La'asos Dami Medivrahim, V'chol D'Rabbanan Akila B'Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, Ula, these are good questions against Ula. But Ula subscribes to Rav Yochanan. Now remember, the fundamental question of, when I am not paying equivalency, when deconsecrating, did I violate the Torah? Did I violate the Divrei Chachamim? According to Reish Lakish, and according to Rav Chista, any deviation is an Issur D'Oraisa. Fine. But Ula says, but I subscribe to Rav Yochanan's viewpoint. Rav Yochanan says that when it comes to a deviation from its fair market value, that's not an Issur D'Oraisa, it's an Issur D'Rabbanan. So fine, so we're talking about Issur D'Rabbanan. So if we're talking about Issur D'Rabbanan, and I got my first appraisal in, I'm good. You're going to tell me that there's a second appraisal. And yes, you're going to tell me the second appraisal, the second appraisal group is bigger, better, et cetera, et cetera. But we're only starting off with an Issur D'Rabbanan. And so therefore, I feel like once we have a registered first appraisal, so then we can follow the first appraisal. And the only reason why I'd have to regard the second appraisal is because of a Din D'Rabbanan. Fine. In other words, it's not we're minimizing the Din D'Rabbanan. It's that coupled with the fact that I already have a first appraisal put in, so we can go with the first appraisal. Harizu tachas ola tachas chatas lo amar klum. A person said that this is tachas ola tachas chatas. He has said nothing. Why has he said nothing? It's really simple. Because this Mishnah over here is dealing with a scenario where there is no primary animal. Meaning, he is not transferring Kedusha. He's using the language of tachas, right? Tachas chatas and tachas ola. But there's no primary animal. So if there's no primary animal, so what was the sentence? It was a bunch of nonsense. And the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is of the opinion that when a person says nonsense, we can ignore him. By the way, who disagrees with this? Ah, very good. Right? Rav Meir disagrees with this basic idea. Rav Meir says that ein adam osei dvarim levatala. A person doesn't simply utter things that are nonsensical. Yes, what he said was slightly confusing, and we have to make sense of it. And the Gemara is going to make that point. Tachas chatas zu, v'tachas ola zu. Tachas chatas zu, v'tachas ola zu. Tachas chatas, v'tachas ola sheishli bebais. Hayelo, dvarv kayomim. If, on the other hand, he uses the words tachas, but he actually has a carbon either right here, and he points to it and he says zu, or even if it's not right here, but he has ownership of it, and it's in his house, so then, dvarv kayomim. So then what he said is going to be regarded. A person turns to one of his non-kosher animals. Or if he turns to an animal which is a baal mum and he says, this is an ola, so according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, disregarded. Hare elu le'ola. If, however, he says it is for an ola, so then yimachru v'yavi midmeim ola. So that means that what he wanted to do was he wanted this animal to be the sourcing of his funding for his carbon. And so therefore he's going to sell it, and the proceeds will go towards the carbon ola. Okay, two quick points of the Gemara. Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Masis Nelo Karebi Meir, Di Kareb Meir, Ha'in Adamotzi Dvarv Levatala. Now our Mishnah is not going like Rav Meir, because Rav Meir says that when a person says something that sounds nonsensical, so we make sense out of nonsense. And so we're going to reinterpret his words. Now the Gemara does not state anything further, meaning, and therefore what? So in the cases of our Mishnah, so, first of all, it's not clear in the Gemara which of the cases, because there's a number of nonsensical statements that were made in the Mishnah. Now, our Tana of our Mishnah does not subscribe to Rav Meir, even though, by the way, we normally say Stam Mishnah Ka Rav Meir. But our Mishnah doesn't subscribe to Rav Meir. So, our Mishnah allows us to ignore it. But according to Rav Meir, it says you don't ignore. So, which case was he talking about in the Mishnah? Perhaps all of them. And what is then going to be the proper interpretation? So, that is where I come to an end, and then when you learn the daf, that's where it continues, right? For starting point of this discussion, see Rashi, the first Rashi on the Gemara. Hare elu la'ola yimachru v'yavi b'dam av ola. So if it is, if you say it's li'ola, so that means it's value. Time de behemah tamei balas mum de lo chazion lo bayin muma. Avamafish nekev la'ashem ola ola bayin muma. Ah, So the Gemara says that in the cases of our Mishnah, we're talking about a non-kosher animal, or we're talking about an animal that's a Baal Mum. So there, immediately goes right to Damim. And so therefore, you don't have to wait for it to develop a blemish. Although by a Baal Mum, the reason why you don't have to wait for it to develop a blemish is because it's already there. Understood. But in other words, but even by the Behemoth Tamea. The contrast, which now the Gemara points out, is let's say it was a Tamim, it just happens to be, it was a female, and you set it up as an Asham. Or it was a female, you set it up as an Ola. Should sound familiar? We discussed this extensively back in the third parak of the Masechta. So now, under those circumstances, it's blemished, but it has Kedushas Aguf, an idea we spent a lot of time discussing back in the third parak. Now note, the Gemara says that yes, that's a good pshat in our Mishnah, that's a correct pshat in our Mishnah. But also remember that in the third parak we learned the shita of Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon taught us back at the end of the third parak that if a person dedicates a nekeva as an olam, as an ola or as an asham, directly it's damim, and you can sell it immediately, and you do not have to wait until it receives a blemish. Hadron Allah Ketzah Marimim, that is the end of the fifth parak. Tomorrow, Mir Hashem, we start the sixth parak of the Masechta.